Good morning. Who else has the pollen sniffles? Everybody? Okay. I hear it out there. I hear it myself too. So let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Ignore the numbers 14 behind me for now. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We are on the precipice of a new series. I'm trying to belabor the point too long. I'm going to belabor the point all morning for you because this is going to be an introduction sermon to the idea of what we're going to be doing for the next couple of weeks. It's not going to be a 10-week study. It easily could be. I'm going to save you the 10-week study syndrome, which means when you get to like week 9, you're already bored, right? I know I would be. That's why I don't want to give you 10 sermons in a row. So here we go. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Let's begin reading in verse 1. This is in the New Testament, which is hopefully obvious. Paul is the author writing to the church at Corinth, and he's reminding them of things they already know, which is nice because they knew it already. But again, reminder is a good idea. Same concept for this morning. Everything we're going to be talking about, you already know. But it's just a reminder of some things that we may have forgotten over the years or neglected to study up on. And so here we go. Chapter 10, verse 1. For I don't want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. You knew that, right? Well, they thought they knew it. The idea of looking at the people of Israel coming from Egypt, going through the Red Sea, that is, for Paul, a symbol of them being baptized under his leadership. And they're all together in unity. They're one big group, one body. Verse 3, and they all ate the same spiritual food, and they all drank the same spiritual drink, because they drank from the spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ. When you read in the book of Exodus, do you see Jesus in that picture at all? Not literally, right? But Paul did. When he thinks back about their transformation from being slaves to being the greatest nation in Canaan over time, Paul saw Jesus in that particular photo. All right, in verse 5. Nevertheless, with most of them God was not pleased, because they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things took place as examples for us, that we might not desire evil as they did. So what Paul is doing here is he's trying to use the story, the narrative in the Exodus as the people of Israel, that's the church. That's the New Testament church. We're all one body under the leadership of Jesus, not Moses, and we're being led to the promised land we would call heaven, right? So that's the image we have there for us. And that's why the Old Testament is so important for Christians to know, is because that apparently is a picture as an example for us. And so we can keep reading here. You're going to get the whole concept of what they desired, which is not God, but evil things, and they were testing God time and time again. And they eventually reached a breaking point with God. Of all people, the long-suffering Creator God had enough of his people. And that's a terrifying concept, because we love to read about God being merciful, long-suffering, patient, full of grace and mercy, and that he is, but not to everyone and not forever. That's the reality behind the God that made us. So we go to the book of Numbers, chapter 14, and we see that moment, the example of God's people reaching a breaking point with God. And we look at that particular story this morning. In chapter 13 of the book of Numbers, just so you have an idea of where we are in the story here, they've left Egypt. They've had some run-ins with the patience of God over time. They desired things that God did not provide for them, and they complained and they grumbled and they said, it'd be better if we go back and die as slaves, time and time again. And they eventually got to the Jordan River, but they were afraid. So they sent out spies, right, for each tribe of Israel. And all the spies went across to see what this promised land was like. And they were terrified, most of them. You have Joshua and you have Caleb being the two exceptions. They said, God is able to give us this victory. Let's go up at once and do it. The rest had bad news for the group. Let's drop down to chapter 13, verse 31, to kind of summarize. Then the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people because they're stronger than we are. Well, so was the Egyptian army, right? That should be the implication. But they said, no, there's no way we can do this. So they brought to the people of Israel, verse 32, a bad report of the land that they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people we saw in it are of great height. And there we saw the Nephilim, and we seemed to ourselves like grasshoppers, and so we seemed to them. So the idea here is they saw some big people, they got afraid, and they say, these people are bigger than our God. We can't do it. We know it's nonsense, right? God gave them that victory through Joshua's leadership eventually. But chapter 14, verse 1. Then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. They had traveled all that way to get to the border, and they said, we can't do it. We can't get this victory. And they were terrified, and they were afraid, and they screamed and they cried. Verse 2, and all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or that we had died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt? They got to the edge, right? They got right there and they said, we can't do it. God can't give us this victory. Let's go back and be slaves and die in Egypt. Terrible thought. Now again, remember, the reason why we have this story is for an example, right? Our example is we face something in life. God has brought us this far by his grace and mercy, and we say we can't win this next victory with God's help. And so we give up and we go back into sin is the idea. But in this narrative, in this story, let's pick it up in verse 4. And they said to one another, let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt. And then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the people of Israel. So you have the people of Israel, they're saying, we're not going to go over there and die in combat. We're going to choose a leader for ourselves and go back to Egypt and become slaves once again. I don't know how they're going to make it through the Red Sea the second time, but that was their plan. And so you have Moses and you have Aaron, the appointed leaders of the Israelites, and they fall on their faces before God at the tabernacle, verse 6. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who spied out the land, they tore their clothes, they rent their garments, right, in the King James. And they said to all the congregation of Israel, the land which we pass through to spy it out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord and don't fear the people of the land because they are bread for us. What a great line, right? So they were really ready to go. They had faith. They had belief. They knew if God brought them this far, they were going to conquer the land too. They go, they're nothing. They're bread for us. Their protection is removed from them. The Lord is with us. Do not fear them. So you have an encouraging word from Joshua and Caleb. Hey, look, we can do this. God brought us this far. We can cross over there and just wipe them out because God's with us. That was their message. And so from that encouragement, what was the response? All the congregation, verse 10, said to stone them with stones. They tried to kill the folks that were saying God can do this for us, right? A little bit humorous for me is because the image here is pretty dramatic. It took me a pretty good while to figure out how would you stone someone with stones? I thought like maybe it was like you put them in a pit and you just drop one big rock on them. That's not how you do it, apparently. You have them, and people just start throwing stones until they eventually die from blunt trauma. Pretty brutal way to go, right? Not fun, not quick, not easy, not painless. A pretty bad way to go. That was the plan. But the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the people of Israel. So now God showed up. He's not going to be happy. We kind of get that idea already. I know you guys couldn't hear on the stream, but everyone hear that rumble during the Lord's Supper? Is it a C-17 or a Raptor or something flying around? That kind of rumble that was real low and kind of a little bit terrifying, right? Can you imagine approaching Mount Sinai from Egypt, and they got there, and the glory of the Lord's on that mountain, everything is shaking, and there's thunder, and there's light, and people are terrified, right? So when I think about the glory of the Lord appearing at this moment, I kind of imagine something as scary as that rumble was, just shiny because God's there. In verse 11, the Lord said to Moses, harsh word, isn't it? You ever told someone that you loved out of frustration or anger or rage that you hated them? I have. And, you know, caught up in emotion as a young child, and then you look at your mother or somebody and say, I hate you. It's terrible. But God here says, how long will this people despise me? Think so little of me, the God that made them, that I can't give them this victory. How long will they not believe in me in spite of all the signs that I have done among them? And there were a lot of signs. We're going to figure that out over the course of this series. Verse 12, I will strike them with pestilence and disinherit them, and I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they. That's God's plan. His plan is to kill all of them in a horrible way and start a new family. That's how far they got with God. But Moses said to the Lord, then the Egyptians will hear of it, because you brought up this people in your might from among them, and they will tell the inhabitants of the land. They have heard that you, O Lord, are in the middle or the midst of this people, because you, O Lord, have seen face to face, and your cloud stands over them, and you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. Now, if you kill this people as one man, then the nations who have heard your fame will say, it's because the Lord, or Jehovah, was not able to bring this people into the land that he swore to give to them, that he has killed them in the wilderness. So Moses says, you can't do that because people have heard about you now. They heard what happened in Egypt. And they know your power. They know your might. And if you just kill everyone, they're going to say you're weak. You can't look that way to the other nations. In verse 17, and now, please, let the power of the Lord be great as you have promised, saying, the Lord is slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love, forgiving iniquity and transgression, but will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation. So he's quoting God to God to say, you can't do that. That's not how you described yourself. Verse 19, please, pardon the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your steadfast love, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt until now. That's our mission, to track from Egypt until now. Have you ever watched a movie? At the beginning of the movie, they show you the end of the movie. You know what I mean? They just kind of jump forward to the end, and here's the ending, and then they do flashbacks to tell you the rest of the story. That's what this is. This is us looking at the end of the movie, the story, the narrative, and seeing how it went down, and then we figure out how they got to that point. And my goal in doing this is not to belabor the point, but to make the point very clear that we could be the stars of this movie if we're not careful. We don't want that ending, right? What's the ending? Let's keep reading. The Lord said, I've pardoned according to your word, verse 21, but truly, as I live, which God, who made the living, has the right to claim that. But truly, as I live, and as all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Don't miss that one, because we're included in that particular sentence. Verse 22, none of the men who have seen my glory and my signs that I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and yet have put me to the test these 10 times, and have not obeyed my voice, shall see the land that I swore to give to their fathers, and none of those who despised me shall see it. It's not a good ending. They made it all this way. God gave them water, gave them food, gave them quail one time. They got to the end. They despised the Lord, and the Lord says, then fine, none of you are going to go over. You could have had the victory, but you didn't believe in me. Two exceptions. But my servant Caleb, verse 24, because he has a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land into which he went, and his descendants shall possess it. And he did, as an old guy. Now, since the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwell in the valleys, turn tomorrow and set out for the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, verse 26, saying, how long shall this wicked congregation grumble against me? I have heard their grumblings of the people of Israel, which they grumble against me. Say to them, as I live, declares the Lord, what you have said in my hearing I will do to you. Your dead bodies shall fall in this wilderness, and of all your number, listed in the census from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. This is our God, and he's had enough. No one, verse 30, shall come into the land where I swore that I would make you dwell, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. But your little ones, who you said would become prey, I will bring in, and they shall know the land that you have rejected. But as for you, your dead bodies shall fall in this wilderness, and your children shall be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years, and shall suffer for your faithlessness until the last of your dead bodies lie in the wilderness. Again, God of mercy, God of peace, God of patience, but this is the end of their story. And what Paul was saying was, remember Numbers 14? All those times they tested God and they were all together, ate the same food, had the same drink, they were all under one leadership, Moses. That's the story for us. That's our example. To not do this, to make it all the way to the end, just about to cross over and then to give up. That's our example, Paul is saying. Let's finish out this particular section, and then we'll close for the morning. Verse 34. According to the numbers of days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, a year for each day you shall bear your iniquity 40 years, and you shall know my displeasure. I, the Lord, have spoken. Surely this I will do to all the wicked congregation who are gathered together against me in this wilderness. They shall come to a full end, and there they shall die. And the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation grumble against him by bringing up a bad report about the land, the men who brought up a bad report of the land died by plague before the Lord. They kind of made a point. I'm serious about this. Other spies, you're dead. Of those men who went to spy out the land, only Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh remained alive. Again, that's the end of the movie for us, right? We look at that and we say, we don't want this ending. So let's see how they got there. What steps they took these 10 times to test the Lord and to find him faithful, and find themselves faithlessness. And we'll see what those steps were, and then we can avoid them actively in our lives. That's the goal, right? I don't want to end on a sour note here. It's not a great story to read and kind of encourage you, but it is a reminder of there are things that lead progressively towards God having enough, and we don't ever want to get to that point in this life or in the next. And so when we look at these examples of what they did, let's see how we can apply to our situations in our world today and then actively avoid testing God in such ways. That's the plan. Y'all with me? Does it make sense? It's a bad story, right? I don't like it. I like talking about Jesus washing people's feet and dying for our sins and then being resurrected and going to heaven waiting for us and we have a place there. I love those stories, but this is also in the book, so we have to talk about it. All right? If anyone has a need to respond to the invitation of our Lord, if we can pray for you, encourage you, lift you up, or baptize you into Christ, whatever you need, please respond by coming forward as we stand and we sing.